Welcome to The Positivity Effect, where paying it forward and doing something positive in someone's life can provide them with the confidence and motivation to do the same for someone else. Like a stone dropped into a lake, let's create a ripple effect of positivity throughout our world. And it begins with your host, Dr. Thomas Retscher.
Hey guys, what's up? Dr. Tom here, and I'm really looking forward to today's show and my guest, Jessica Leahy. Jessica, are you ready to take it to a whole new level?
I am ready to take it to a whole new level.
Awesome. Jessica Leahy is an educator, speaker, and writer. She has been an English, Latin, and writing teacher in middle and high school for over a decade. She writes the bi-weekly parent-teacher advice column for the New York Times, is a contributing writer at The Atlantic, and appears as a commentator on Vermont Public Radio. Jessica earned a JD from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill with a concentration in juvenile and education law. She lives in New Hampshire with her husband and two sons. Not to mention, she has a New York Times best-selling book, The Gift of Failure, How the Best Parents Learn to Let Go So Their Children Can Succeed. You guys can check her out at jessicaleahy.com. So Jess, gave him a little overview. I'd love for you to talk about the process of how you became an educator.
Sure. So I went to law school in order to do juvenile law. I thought for sure I was going to move straight into juvenile court after law school. That was the plan. And I was invited to teach a class at Duke during the summer to some academically gifted middle school and high school kids. And I came home after that first day of teaching, just lit up. And my husband looked at me and he just turned his head and he said, "Are you even going to finish law school?" I mean, he could tell the minute he saw me that that was what I was going to do. So and that was the summer that I was pregnant with my oldest child. And I've been doing that ever since. And, that trajectory sort of led me to this book, because over time I just started to realize that the kids in my class were becoming increasingly afraid and anxious and a lot less teachable. And then when I started seeing the same thing in my children, I had to sort of really look at what was going on and try to figure out a way forward.
And so as you began this process of rediscovery, was it easy for you to find the right resources?
Well, I mean, there are fantastic parenting books out there. There's a whole bunch that I just love. And you know, as we've moved along over the history of American parenting, we've ended up in a situation where the parenting section at the bookstore is huge. There's so much there. And there's so much with conflicting advice and from different perspectives. And, you know, I read all of it and I didn't feel like the one thing that was missing for me anyway was the way forward out of sort of the situation we're in. And the books that I loved the most, like Paul Tuff's How Children Succeed and Jennifer Senior's All Joy and No Fun and Madeline Levine's books, certainly. They articulated the problem beautifully. But what I really needed was that first step, that like, how do I move forward from here? And that's what I tried to do with this book.
That's wonderful. You know, there was something that one of your students said in the book that really stood out to me. I'm just going to quote it. One of your students was recounting about the fear of failure. She said, "Some people are afraid of heights. Some are afraid of water. I am afraid of failure," which for the record is called acouphobia. "I am so afraid of failing that I lose focus on what actually matters, learning. In focusing on the outcome, I lose the value of the actual assignment and deprive myself of learning." Man, that is so deep. Jess, can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was for a graduation. At the end of eighth grade, for graduation, they have to write about the most valuable moment in their education for them. And it was really interesting because this is a kid who, she was really, really good at school. She was fantastic at school. She'd really taken it up a level. You wouldn't even believe it. She had it was really a science for her. And, you know, she'd just gotten to the point where she had so perfected the game that the what we were doing in class had sort of lost its importance. And the thing is now, I think she really does love to learn again. I think she still struggles with her issues of perfection, but now she's, you know, applying to colleges and is a really smart, really interested, really vibrant, vital kid. But that's been a struggle for her for a while.
Wow. The interesting part of that story for me is that she is a fantastic student.
Absolutely.
And yeah, most parents would be thrilled to know their child is doing well in school. That's eye-opening to hear that this excellent student had this paralyzing fear of failure. Reflecting on that, I can honestly say that I have mentally been there before growing up. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that so many people can relate to that story. So speaking of failure, none of us are obviously immune to it. The beauty is when we learn to embrace failure to fuel us to become a better person. What is a time in your life when you failed or struggled with something?
So I was 26. And I was in law school, and I had, you know, school had always been easy for me. I loved learning. I loved school, but it had always been easy for me. And I'd just never really gotten pushed by a class. And law school really pushed me. I really loved it. But I found out how the exams worked. And they're, you know, one three-hour exam that determines your grade. And but it was a writing exam. It was an essay exam. And, you know, come on, that's right squarely in my wheelhouse. I'm good at that. So I didn't take practice exams, and I didn't strategize, and I didn't, you know, even practice with any of the past questions from years before. And I took my exams, and I got my first grade back, and it was a 68. And I didn't even know if that was passing or failing because I'd never gotten a score that low before. And my first thought, my immediate thought was to pack up and quit. I said, well, you know, I can't do this. I'm not smart enough to hack law school. That was my first thought. Not, what do I need to do to change this for next time? Not, you know, how can I remedy this situation and how can I get better at this? But I have to quit. And, you know, luckily my best friend and the dean of the school at the time talked me down because I would have quit that day. And, you know, I ended up doing fine in law school. I just had to learn how to do it better. And I had to do what everyone else did, which was push through and work through my frustration and get better at law school. But that just didn't even occur to me in that moment. And that's what I'm afraid of for my students. I'm afraid for those students, like the one who wrote that essay, that the first time, you know, she gets pushback and gets an F, you know, as she will at some point, that her first thought is to quit as opposed to push through.
Right, right. So Jess, after that experience, did you feel like you had everything figured out from that point?
You know, I don't know that particular moment was particularly instructive. I think it was a process of figuring right. that out. And I think for me, I didn't really have one aha moment. It wasn't really until I got my hands on Carol Dweck's Mindset, and it wasn't until I read Tim Harford's Adapt, which I think, particularly in business, is invaluable. But that's the thing that's really interesting is so many of the great parenting books that I used for research aren't parenting books at all. They're business books. You know, that's where Dan Pink went to sort of write about human motivation, was to a whole bunch of books that friends of mine who have been through business school tell me are on the curriculum for business school. So, you know, it was a process of reading and learning and figuring all that out. But I've always loved to learn. And so I think I got really lucky with that, you know, that was sort of at baseline for me is I just love to learn. And I get frustrated when people tell me that I can't do something. So,
you see, guys, it's a process. It doesn't happen all at once.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is there's another book that I just adore called Ungifted by a guy named Scott Barry Kaufman, who's at University of Pennsylvania now. And he also got really lucky because he was a special ed kid and, you know, he didn't test well. He had a low IQ and that just didn't sit right with him. He didn't feel like a special ed kid. And no right. kid should feel like a special ed kid, but Scott knew something was up. And, you know, he's ended up going on to get his PhD and he's, you know, Yale and Cambridge University and is looking to change the way we assess intelligence by adding in, you know, creativity into the mix. And this is a kid who got really lucky, but not many kids get lucky. Not many kids are able to develop that mindset that, wait a second, no, this doesn't feel right and this doesn't sit right with me. We allow so many kids to develop that fixed mindset that Carol Dweck talks about where they are their label, they are their failures. And there's no future beyond that because, you know, if you are your failures, then that failure is you and you can't really move past it. So that's, you know, sort of one of the biggest things that I've had to learn is, you know, how do we move past when someone says, you know, you stink as a writer, which, you know, in comments, especially writing online, I get that kind of stuff all the time. You stink, you're a bad teacher, you shouldn't be allowed to write or teach or blah, 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 blah. And we have to learn how to not take that so personally and how to say, okay, well, what's constructive in that for me? What can I take away from that or leave it behind and not carry it along in my psyche with me for the rest of my life?
You know, myself reading that, it was very powerful as well. Like just thinking back when I was in school and maybe I got a bad grade on something and I thought, you know, it's not me, it's yeah. the teacher. And just, wow, like now it's like a light bulb went on, understanding really from your perspective that you got to let us fail. You got to let us go through yeah. that process.
Well, and what about the kids? You know, I was one of those kids who was told, you're just not a math person. And I accepted that. I let teachers tell me that I just wasn't a math person. And I, you know, I stopped taking math the minute I was able to, did poorly in it the whole way through. And in my 40s, I went back and took Algebra 1. Wow. Mainly because I had a free period when one of my colleagues that I really respected was teaching Algebra 1. So I took Algebra 1 in middle school with my middle school students in my 40s. And it's not true at all. I am a math person. I just need to work harder at it than some of my eighth grade classmates. You know, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And it, you know, it was really sad to me that for, you know, I'm 45 now and I've allowed other people to slap labels on me that aren't necessarily true.
You hear that, guys? It starts mentally. Like we have a label
it really
about
does.
Something. Wow. It you never know what your potential is. And once you start labeling and saying, I'm not this or I can't do that, you're already setting yourself up for failure to not be able to do one of those things.
Well, but the really important message also of Carol Dweck is that the positive labels, the so-called positive labels like genius and smart and gifted and talented and creative and all that sort of stuff, those can be as negative as the, you know, the special needs or not a math person type labels, because those get you into a fixed mindset where you think, okay, well, what I've got is what I've got and I don't want to risk that. I don't want anyone to know that I may not be as smart as people think I am. So I'm not going to risk it by doing anything challenging because if I fail, then people won't think I'm smart anymore. And that's just as damaging as the negative stuff.
Yeah. Wow. Like taking the easiest route to get that success.
That's what Carol Dweck's research is all about. That's why I think anyone that's a parent or teacher should have to read Mindset.
Excellent. You hear that, guys? Got to read it. So, Jess, tell us about a mentor, mentors in your life, how they helped you, and your take on the importance of mentors.
You know, I've been so, so lucky. I've had some really incredible mentors, and a lot of them have been teachers. Two of them are teachers, one retired, one that's actually the head of the department at the high school that I went to, Casey Potts, who's quoted in the book. He was my English teacher in high school, and Don Cannon, also an English teacher in high school. And then Jack Boger, who has been the dean of University of North Carolina Law School for a long time, but when I met him was my constitutional law and education law professor. And these are all teachers that I've never, you know, teachers in general love to learn. A lot of teachers, though, get in this rut where they come to class with their prepared material and they just read off of a script. And they don't really want to change because that's a lot of work. They don't want to switch up the material or that, you know, they've gotten into this groove. And these were teachers who let students ask really hard questions that made them better teachers and change things up because that's where the learning happens. And listened to their students and listened, took feedback from their students and tried to be better teachers all the time. I just have so much respect for the three of them. I think they're just, they were amazing teachers. And I still am friends with them. I still talk to these people. I still email back and forth with them and I continue to learn from them.
Wow. You know, it continues on and on. You never know.
Well, and I have students of mine who have gone on to be teachers. And that's been really trippy. There's one in particular, this woman, Kira, who has been a middle school teacher for the past couple of years. And she'll email me about books I taught her.
Wow.
About how she should teach them. She was teaching Gatsby a couple of years ago. And, you know, that's pretty mind trippy because she might email me a question about Gatsby. And if I wanted to, I could email my teacher about who taught me Gatsby.
Wow.
So that's pretty amazing to be able to be a part of that, you know, handing the baton to the next generation of teachers. And I'm just so privileged to be in that spot.
Oh, amazing. It's like, and when you read that email, it's like you see, you think back to when she was sitting in your class.
I actually have, when I stopped teaching that group of kids, I've always been really lucky. I've generally taught kids a couple years in a row, so I really get to know them well. And I have a little booklet they made for me when I had to leave that teaching post, a little thank you booklet. And in it are a bunch of doodles and stuff that kids had put on their work while I was teaching. And there's little doodles from Great Gatsby. And, you know, I could hand her own doodles from when I was teaching Great Gatsby. So it was pretty, and she's now an artist too. And I have a sketch she did of me when I was teaching, and actually now hanging in my living room is a painting she, two paintings she did of my children in my living room. So, you know, it's pretty trippy. I love it.
Man, Jess, if you could see me right now, I am smiling, smiling ear to ear. That's awesome.
Pretty cool. I tweeted out once, I also have this one gigantic painting of hers that I purchased from her. And I said, you know, encourage your creative students because you might end up with paintings like this on your wall. And it's just, it's a museum piece. It's absolutely beautiful. And she's so talented. And, you know, encouraging all the gifts in the students we have, not just the ones that we're supposed to teach them. You know, it's such an important part of what we do.
Powerful, guys. So this is a great time to talk about gratitude.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Jess, share with us the most gratifying moment you ever experienced while mentoring to somebody.
Oh, well, that, you know, it's an amalgam moment, but I teach, you know, when I teach middle school in particular, I'm teaching kids that neurologically, they don't have the capacity. Some of them don't have the capacity to think about metaphors and symbols yet. It's not about being smart. It's about those connections happening in the brain. So sometimes I have, you know, you just have to be really patient with some kids. And I continue to present that information when I teach so that when it happens, they're ready. And so, you know, when I'm teaching, for example, Great Expectations over and over and over again, I will present metaphors. I'll present symbolism about what's going on. And some of the kids will look at me like, you know, they're halfway there, but not all the way there. And then all of a sudden, one day, you can see this light go on and you can see they get this, oh my gosh, that's what she's been talking about this whole time. And it's like in that moment, the neurons have connected and I can't control it and they can't control it. You just have to be present when that moment happens. And, you know, after teaching hundreds of kids, I've been really, really privileged to be there at that moment. And that's where all the good stuff is. That's the amazing moment of being a teacher. When a kid gets it for the first time, it's pretty incredible. And that's, you know, it's totally addictive. That's why it's chasing that high all the time. And the nice thing about teaching as opposed to drugs is that, you know, you don't get used to it. It continues to be that good every time.
And it gets better and better.
Yeah, yeah.
So gratitude is such a powerful word, guys.
It really is. And the kids that I'm teaching now, it's pretty easy to have those moments, because I used to teach really privileged kids, and now I'm teaching kids who are alcohol and drug addicted and in an inpatient rehab situation. I've taken this semester off, but I'll go back in January, and those kids haven't had, many of them have not had the ability to, I don't know, have a teacher really reach out and say, you know, I see something really special in you, and I want you to learn, and I want you engaged in this, and I'm glad you're here. And I think I've had more moments of gratitude in that classroom since starting teaching there over a year ago that, you know, that I've had, you know, over years and years and in other classrooms. They're just, it's just easier to find those moments because, although it's really, really hard because those kids don't want to be there. Those moments are really, really special in that classroom.
So powerful. Jess, can you tell us, it's from the book, The Shoelace Story?
Yeah, you know, about the same time that I was reading that essay about being afraid of failure, you know, that was really a light bulb moment for me. And I needed, you know, I had this sort of call to action with my own kids, and I needed to do something really symbolic. I needed to do something that was, you know, a metaphor for the whole situation. You know, I'm an English teacher. I get off on that stuff. So at the time, third grader, he couldn't tie his shoes. And, you know, it had been faster for me to do it. Every time we needed to get out the door, we were always in a rush. I was like, okay, well, I'll just do it. So we were in a situation where, you know, he was the only kid in his class who couldn't tie his shoes. So, I came home from school. I sort of was in this place in my head where I'm like, okay, this is going to happen today. I'm going to be really patient. I'm going to be really supportive. We'll have a snack first. And we did it. And he, you know, he was really resistant because he felt stupid. I had gotten him to the point where he felt like he was incapable of doing it, because every time I'd done it for him, I had underlined that fact. Every single time we do something for our kids, we tell them, I don't trust you. I don't think you're competent enough to do this. And, you know, we certainly don't mean to do that, but that's what we do. So I had been doing that over and over and over again, which means I had been telling him over and over and over again, I don't think you can do this. And suddenly I was saying, I do think you can do this. And we spent the time to do it. And he was really proud of himself.
Man, I love that story. So when you had that light bulb moment and you started to make the changes, did the kids adjust right away?
My kids or my students? Because I did it in both places.
With your kids?
With my kids, yeah. I mean, especially the older one is pretty quick to catch on to my moves. And he totally, you know, he's the one that has been doing a lot of, come on, mom, cut out this gift of failure thing. Can we just, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he gets pissed when I won't ask him about grades, because I'm trying to stay away from the topic of grades and talk more about learning. And he's like, come on, just ask me what I got on the stupid test. So, yeah, I mean, I think kids get used to the line in the sand that we draw for them. And, you know, even teenagers, they really like to know where the line is. And when we change that for them, it's a difficult transition. But on the other hand, you can also have this really lovely honeymoon period where suddenly everything's going really well. And then in about 2 weeks, you can expect them to fall apart and retest all of the lines. So it really depends on the kid. But, you know, in my house anyway, there were some really immediate gains that were hard to deny, even when there was pushback later on. So it was definitely, I got the feedback I needed in order to show that I was on the right path. And so I just kept going that way.
So guys, Jess is saying, whether it's parenting or anything that you're struggling with in life, you may have the honeymoon period, you know, where everything is working out when you make the change.
Yeah.
But then you might run into a couple of roadblocks. And when you hit those roadblocks, guys, keep on pushing.
Absolutely.
Keep on moving forward through it, and you will get to the end of the tunnel and see the light. Jess, I have truly enjoyed listening to your journey, and the stories you shared were so inspiring. Can you give us one last word of wisdom, share the best way that we can connect with you, and we'll call it a wrap?
One last word of wisdom. I'm going to stick with the one I already said, which is really, anytime you feel like you're stuck, think long term. Don't think about, you know, what's going to make you feel best right in the moment, or what's going to make your kids feel best right in the moment. But think about your long-term goals and what's going to help you get there. And you can find me at Jessica Lahey, LAHEY.com. And you can see where my book tour starts on Monday. My big, big book tour starts on Monday. I'm going to be on the road for pretty much through the end of the year. And you get there buy book links there too. So anything you need in order to find me is at JessicaLahey.com.
Excellent. Jess, the listeners are aware that they can find links to everything of value that we mentioned today by going to positivityeffect.com, clicking on the podcast tab, and finding in the archives, or just entering your name in the search bar, and your show notes page will pop right up.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm going to head out into the garden, I think.
Guys, I learned in the chat before the interview that Jess loves gardening. Have fun, Jess.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Positivity Effect. I promise to keep sharing inspiring stories with the guests each and every Monday. I hope you feel inspired, and I hope that we stirred some self-reflection in you on topics like transparency and compassion and empathy. Please check out the website at positivityeffect.com. Sign up for the newsletter, and I'll send you some tips to get you thinking more positively. I would also love to hear from all of you, so please write to me, because every Sunday I'm going to share an inspiring story from one of the listeners, just like yourself. If you have a story where you exhibited compassion towards someone or you paid it forward, I'd love to hear about it. So thanks again. If you love the show, please head over to iTunes, leave a review. It means the world. Take care, and talk to you next Monday.